Prize Awards are back for 2024 and early bird entries are still open. These awards recognise the best use of digital media, marketing and commerce, and they also celebrate innovation and expertise right across the digital marketing industry. There are more categories than ever before to enter, so visit exchangewire.com/events to find out more.
The MadTech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by ExchangeWire.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of the MadTech Podcast. I'm your host today, Amy Neal-Tareen. I'm pleased to be joined by Matt Broughton, our research lead. Welcome, Matt.
Hi, Amy. Delighted to be here.
Yeah, great to have you here. And our special guest today, Alessandro De Zanchi, independent monetization consultant at Ad Strategies. Great to have you here, Alessandro. How are you?
Hello, everybody. I'm great. And thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. So let's get into today's stories. First up, we have a story by The Guardian, which focuses on sustainability. The UN Secretary General called for governments and companies to place bans on advertisements for coal, oil and gas. He said many in the fossil fuel industry have shamelessly greenwashed, even as they have sought to delay climate action with lobbying, legal threats and massive ad campaigns. So I'll come to you first, Alessandro. Is the UN right to call for governments to ban ads for fossil fuels, and should governments be banning these ads? What do you think?
I think absolutely right to mention it. And we should remember that it's not just calling for stopping advertising. It's first and foremost denouncing what's going on. It's denouncing greenwashing, it's denouncing distorting the truth, deceiving the public, sowing doubt. So to me, the UN as an overarching entity beyond governments is absolutely right, because who would protect an informed citizens? Otherwise, have the governments done so? Very poorly, I think. And has the media provided more visibility to the issue? Yes, partially, but still a lot more needs to be done. So to me, as an advice to the countries, to the citizens of the world, the UN is doing the right thing.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there. I think, yeah, we need to be completely denouncing the use of all of this and, yeah, calling out the companies for greenwashing and all these things that they're doing, you know, trying to manipulate the public into thinking it's not as damaging as it really is when, you know, it's really destroying the planet. So I completely agree with you there. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, I'm completely in agreement with the pair of you. Although I do think in terms of the UN's efforts, I think initially at least it should be more focused on that kind of lobbying and private action, you know, against legal cases, you know, focusing on, you know, the big fossil companies have taken legal action against reporters for reporting on the damage they're doing to the environment. And I think in terms of the action they're also doing in terms of lobbying governments, that should, you know, definitely be a priority. But governments, you know, obviously the ideal case is that you wouldn't have the need to have the UN to kind of enforce them into doing this, but whether directly or through, you know, enhanced powers to advertising standards authorities, as an example, they should definitely ensure, you know, rules around accuracy and truth around advertising when it relates to fossil fuel advertising and their, you know, their impact on the environment. They need to be as robust as possible.
Yeah, I think that's, yeah.
I agree with Matt.
Yeah.
I agree with Matt. And I think, though, that the public opinion should know. And so it's positive that the UN came out in this way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I think as well, like you were saying, I think there needs to be more exposure around the lobbying that goes on and for, yeah, people to really understand how much of that is going on. So, yeah, it's something definitely that should be given more exposure in the press. And Alessandro, back to you. Do those working in the advertising sector have any responsibility to decline ads from fossil fuel companies?
I think it depends. So it depends, because here is not just about advertising. It's about a media company, a media brand. So if you as a media company believe that the earth is flat, and then that's the core of your beliefs and content, then yes, you can do whatever you want. So you want to serve that kind of advertising? Is it in line with your values? Yes, then go ahead. I would completely disagree, but it's very important that a media company is true to its own values. So an issue that we have often in media is this disconnection between different parts of the company, of the media company. So you have editorial going one way, advertising going another way, subscriptions going yet another way. And it's one of the most important areas to tackle for the future of media. And then one of the aspects that would be solved would be this that we are discussing today. So it's not in line with our beliefs, with our content, with what our audience is expecting from us, then yes, we will stop that advertising. But another one is, well, maybe we can talk about it later.
Okay, yeah, I think that's a great point to make about making sure that the advertising kind of aligns with a particular, you know, your company's beliefs. If you're going to advertise something, it should be something that aligns with your values and, you know, what you believe in there. And so now coming to you, Matt, what do you feel about publishers as well? Should they be refusing ads from fossil fuel companies? Obviously, recently publishers have been, you know, having a bit of a harder time with their revenues declining. What do you think about their responsibility when it comes to this?
Yeah, I think it's a kind of double-edged sword here. So on the one hand, I think it kind of feeds into the wider conversation around advertising against news-based content. And I think many advertisers still have, you know, outdated brand safety concerns. Therefore, they refuse to run campaigns against news articles, which leaves a gap. And, you know, that big revenue gap, which obviously that leads to, you know, the likes of fossil fuel companies. That gives a gap to them, and they're going to run ads against there. But that said, I do disagree with, you know, having internal studios at major news publishers that run, you know, climate associated advertorials and events produced in association with fossil fuel companies. And to me, that is concerning. And in an ideal world, publishers would look at, you know, addressing, reducing, or halting those relationships. But coming back to that point, we're not in an ideal world. News publishers are not receiving that fair share of the advertising pie because of those brand safety concerns, blocking ad dollars. That money is then pumped into, you know, the ostensibly brand safe made for advertising sites, which is obviously a huge ongoing industry conversation at the moment, which, yes, they're ostensibly brand safe, but they're not, you know, they're not getting that genuine human attention interaction. On Wednesday this week, we published an article covering the financials across the advertising industry over Q1, and it just goes to demonstrate how publishers are not, at the moment, receiving that fair share, because advertising technology companies, on average, their revenue went up 13%. Big tech companies, so the likes of Google, Facebook, etc., up 17%. Agencies, so, you know, the buy side, up 9%. Publishers, they were the only one that was down, and they were down 3%. So it just shows, you know, it goes to show that publishers may not be necessarily receiving their fair share of the advertising pie currently, which is obviously leading to, you know, potential gaps slash potential exploitation by the fossil fuel companies, as an example.
Yeah, those are some really great points, Matt. I think it kind of depends as well how much of a position they are that they need to take the money. I think if, you know, if they're in a much more positive position that they don't need the money as badly, then they probably should, you know, they probably should say, no, we don't actually need to take this. We can, you know, use something that aligns more with our values. But yeah, it's harder if they're in a position where their revenues are declining and they do need that money more. So yeah, it's a bit of a complicated one.
I have a two thoughts to add to this. One is about, we mentioned brand safety. We always think of brand safety as one way, is the brand being worried of where the ads will end up against, on what type of content, what publishers rarely consider, what the industry in general rarely consider, is that it's a two-way issue. Brand reputation is also for the media brand, which will serve ads that are against their own values, against what their audience believes in, and therefore it's a reputational damage. That's the first one. And then, yes, advertising is very important for publishers today. Yes, stopping advertising about oil and gas would be damaging, but we need also to look at the root of the issue. I call it the perpetual cycle of emergency. So traditionally, in the last 20 years, publishers have always opted for the easy way, for the short-term strategy, which left them weaker, which then exposed them to whatever happens around them, being it a pandemic, a financial crisis, a war, a UN calling for ban on coal and oil advertising. And all those short-term strategies lead to short-term achievements that are not sustainable and leave them weaker to the next crisis. So every crisis triggers a short-term choice, a short-term strategy, which in return leaves them even weaker for the next crisis. So yes, if we take just the snapshot of today, yes, it's an issue to say no to that type of advertising. But I think publishers need to have a wider perspective and a wider strategy, which hopefully will take them back to self-sustainability and in a stronger position to say no to whatever goes against their business.
Yeah, that's really a good point. And also what you said about brand safety going both ways, definitely that needs to be considered for both parties that are, you know, showing the advertising as well as just the advertisers who want to get their ads placed. Yeah, I think as well just goes back to what you were saying about making sure things are aligned with your beliefs and, yeah.
Absolutely. This is an example of short-term strategy. So, yes, I serve oil and coal advertising, even though it goes against my beliefs and my audience's belief, which means that then I will lose some audience, I will have less traffic, I will have less subscriptions. And that's a vicious cycle that is not doing any good to publishers.
Yeah, definitely true. Very short-term solution, not thinking of the future at all. Okay, I think let's move on to our second story. So for our next piece of news, we're moving on to topic of AI with a story from the Financial Times. And Silicon Valley is in uproar over a Californian AI safety bill. So members leading the AI industry are protesting against a proposed bill in California, which would force tech companies to adhere to a strict safety framework regulating the technology. The bill was passed by the California Senate last month, and it's now set for a General Assembly vote in August. And the bill would require AI groups in the state to give their guarantee to a new state body that they won't develop models with hazardous capacity, and means developers would have to report on their safety testing and introduce a kill switch to shut down their models. And so far, critics have accused the bill of being overly restrictive and say it will drive AI leaders to relocate away from California. So I'll come to you first, Matt. When it comes to AI, how much control do you think governments should exert?
I think, you know, governments are absolutely critical in maintaining standards and in holding companies accountable should they contravene those standards. You know, only now, you know, in the advertising industry is, you know, government action against the likes of Google coming in years and years too late after, you know, their what I'll say in heavy commas, alleged monopolization and trillions of dollars extracted from the industry. And if those standards are not maintained on an industry-wide level, which governments are the most effective at doing, then that gives greater, you know, greater ability for scaled market players to quash competition. And I would argue that's something that's already happening with the likes of OpenAI. If it was a free and open market in AI, then why can't, you know, say Apple, for example, with $400 billion in annual revenue, produce its own AI system rather than having to partner with the likes of OpenAI? So, yeah, and I think in terms of those, just those basic standards, I think governments are absolutely critical in, you know, in maintaining those standards.
Yeah, I think they have an important role to play. What do you think, Alessandro?
I agree with you both. I think that the more impactful the challenge is on people's lives, the higher the accountability and scrutiny that these companies and individuals should go through. Some tech companies and technologists, I feel that they behave and talk like spoiled kids who think they are entitled to experiment on subjects that have a global impact on everybody else on Earth without accountability. So we see it, for example, even with social media and all the issues that have been created there on all levels. So should medical and biological experiments not to be overseen and regulated? The pharma industry, what about weapons? What about nuclear, airlines, security, food standards? Again, it's a vital issue for the world and needs to be at least loosely overseen in the most key areas.
Yeah, no, that's very true. I think everything needs to be regulated to some extent. Just because it's maybe something they don't want regulated doesn't mean that it shouldn't be. Yeah. And do you think, when it comes to this bill, do you think that this bill is overly restrictive, Alessandro?
No, I don't think so. I think that one other characteristic, especially in technology, is to jumping ahead, jumping the gun, crying foul, immediately. So I don't think that they're overly restrictive. If you cannot sustain and accept the regulations on your field, then go and grow tomatoes or roses or open an ice cream shop, right? So you know that you need to play by the rules.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, definitely. And it's an interesting one because it's still so new. So the regulation is still, you know, all starting, it's very new, but there definitely does need to be regulation because it's becoming such a huge technology that, yeah, if it does go unregulated, I guess, you know, there can be problems. Yeah. What do you think, Matt? Do you think this bill is, you know, too strong or?
Yes, how dare California seek to prevent AI systems from aiding the creation of biological and nuclear weapons? Absolute bastards. No, it's not overly restrictive at all. And I think what's more the issue here is, why don't AI companies want those basic safety and reporting standards on their own? Why haven't they moved to implement that? Why has it come down to the state government to legislate for that? You know, feeding back to Alessandro's point about spoiled children, when the headline to the FT article is Silicon Valley in uproar, and then you get forceful negative commentary from a chap who's worked at Google, Baidu and Amazon, then you're probably doing something right as a regulator.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So do you think that AI models should have a kill switch?
Yes, I think, you know, while AI is not the, you know, the science fiction-esque Terminator that will eradicate us all, they're still very sophisticated predictive algorithms which can cause some serious damage if those checks and balances aren't in place and not implemented. So yes, there should definitely be a way of companies stopping the programs if they get out of hand.
Definitely. No, I agree. Yeah, and then let's move on to our third story. So this one is to do with social media and the election. So TikTok has implemented protection measures ahead of the UK election. And with the date now set, TikTok's announced a new dedicated in-app general election center to provide reliable and authoritative information for users ahead of the poll. And so with the update, TikTok's looking to dispel misinformation and manipulation by providing official information. So, Alessandro, how effective do you think this new feature will be?
Well, I think it is definitely a step forward, but it's not enough. To use another analogy, is like renting out a very attractive Airbnb row home with leaks all over the roof, but providing the users with a map on where the leaks are and also providing them with umbrellas. I mean, it's good effort, but it's not the end solution. So informing people about misinformation is great, but they need more efforts and more investment to tackle the problem at the roots.
Yeah, I love that analogy. A very good analogy. So do you think social media platforms have a much more, big responsibility to eradicate misinformation on their platforms?
It's as huge as the impact they have on our society and democracy, I think. When there is a coup d'etat, the first thing that rebels, insurgents do is to take control of information, usually occupying national TV. And so it gives us a scale of the seriousness of the problem. And I think there are a few key steps that need to be taken. One is moderation. We all talk about the marvels of AI and the danger of AI towards humanity. Yet it seems it's very hard for these companies to really effectively implement AI for moderation. So it's I think, one step where they should invest more. I know that is not a silver bullet, but I think also that not enough investments are made. Also on human moderation, and we see now with X and the cuts they have done in moderation and what also what meant for them in terms of advertising. And that's the first thing, but also the transparency of the algorithm, which is easier to said than done. But there is no point to have a general election center, in my opinion, if then at the same time your algorithm creates bubbles where the topics pushed by misinformation and disinformation actors are magnified and reinforced by the recommendation system. So you are taking away on one side and then you're trying to give a little bit back on the other. And that's also absolutely a contradiction.
Yeah, that's very true, very true. I think, it's definitely, the regulation is definitely easier said than done. But like you said, I think, instead of actually cutting these departments, they need a lot more investment to improve the situation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, what do you think, Matt?
Yeah, I think social platforms definitely have a significant responsibility, and I think one that they've kind of shirked for a long period of time. They've argued, obviously, it's user-generated content. We're not the ones publishing it. We're not publishers. But they still have that responsibility to prevent serious social harms, which deliberate misinformation, whether it's from an individual, whether it's from a company, it can amount to. Look at what's been alleged against Facebook in Myanmar as a more serious example of that. But I agree with Alessandro that an election centre that TikTok have rolled out, it's definitely a step in the right direction, but it needs a hell of a lot more than that. And also, why is this just being, oh yes, we'll roll this out for the 6 weeks an election is going. What about the rest of the 5 years during the political cycle? So yeah, it's a step in the right direction. And I am encouraged that TikTok has gone, has partnered with an AI firm, because I think that's where AI, to Alessandro's point, can be really, really a positive boost in, gaining efficiencies in terms of the moderation. But yeah, I think more investment is certainly needed.
Yeah, and that's a good point, Matt. I mean, they could have, there's always, it's not like it's the first election. They could easily have introduced this measure a long time ago, but they chose not to. And yeah, the more that tech develops, the more, tools they have at their disposal to to regulate and to kind of moderate and introduce new features. So I guess, yeah, it's not really good enough because there is still a lot of misinformation out there on social media. Yeah. So do you think, Alessandro, going back to you now, do you think that individuals should be held responsible for spreading misinformation or for spreading disinformation? So if they're doing it on purpose, for example?
Yes and no. Exactly. You already said it. It's we need to differentiate between misinformation and disinformation. I think misinformation is much easier to tackle in the sense that misinformation in good faith can be eradicated even partially with education, while disinformation should be absolutely persecuted.
Yeah, I think it's definitely important to differentiate between both because, misinformation, I guess that's unavoidable for there to be, you know, sometimes misinformation, but if the right measures are in place, it should be able to be tackled. But yes, different when it's being done on purpose.
Yes. And yeah. then there is also the issue, and I'm not the right person here to talk about it. And probably, I mean, the debate is raging. It's what the answer to the question, what is freedom of speech? That doesn't mean being free to say whatever. And as Matt mentioned, publishers would be fined and journalists would be jailed for it. So they are responsible for what they publish. And even, for example, even if it's user-generated content, if the letter to the editor, for example, that they would be prosecuted if they publish something that is misleading. So yes, we need to rethink the way social media relates to content.
Yeah. And what do you think about?
Yeah, definitely. I think that conversation around free speech is it's one that, you know, we can't really cover on a 30-minute podcast, but it's definitely an interesting one where it relates to social media. And it's a case of, obviously, you know, no one should be punished for stating their personal beliefs, especially where not influenced by outside commercial bodies. But I think where an individual, especially if they have, you know, a built up following on a given social platform, then, you know, that's where the independent fact checking should come in. That's where, you know, sources underlining the post should be, you know, in an ideal world, put in to counter what they're saying. Because obviously free speech, it's a case of, yes, you're allowed to say it, but equally someone's allowed to disagree with you. And I think, you know, especially where someone often spreads misinformation or often violates those fact checks, then they should definitely be banned from promoting their viewpoints via paid for promotional posting, because, you know, ultimately, while social firms, you know, social media platforms argue that they're not publishers, they shouldn't be profiting from that deliberate misinformation.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, definitely. Yeah, I think that's a good point to wrap up today's episode. Okay, thank you so much for joining us, Alessandro. It was great to have you.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
And thank you, Matt.
Thanks, Amy. Been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, and thanks to all our listeners. Thanks for listening. That was today's MadTech podcast.